are fake news.
A choppy trading day for the U.S. markets, but the NASDAQ came back from negative territory to close at another record high. It had fallen as investors fled drug stocks when President-elect Donald Trump criticized the sector for its high prices in his first press conference since the election.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump dealing another blow to the Mexican peso, the currency slumping to a historic low of 22.03 peso against the dollar after he reiterated his threat that the U.S. would slap a big border tax on companies that move their plants to Mexico or other foreign countries.
But it's not going to happen. You're going to pay a very large border tax.
Basically, Yahoo disclosed a couple days ago that they are going to change the name to Alt Baba. It's hard to kind of spit out.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's January 12th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell. It's another business day. We've got lots to cover this morning. But first, at the top of the program, another warning about the icy conditions outside. There is a freezing rain advisory that's in effect for much of the Chicago area. When you went to bed last night, there were probably flashes of lightning and rain. It is all ice this morning, so please make sure you watch yourself this morning walking and driving. Salt trucks are out, but more precipitation is on the way just in time for the morning rush. And again, that freezing rain advisory will continue until 9 o'clock this morning. We have our thought leader conversation coming up, and later in the program, how would you like to zip between Columbus, Ohio, and Chicago? The Hyperloop, which is being tested, may have a line, direct line, to Columbus. It's a test feature that's coming up as the scientists work to perfect this idea of perhaps being a pneumatic tube that shoots people across the country in under a couple of hours or so. We're going to be talking about that later in the broadcast as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, as we check the big board, Dow futures are off this morning by about 44 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. We're seeing a little bit of weakness in European markets this morning. And the numbers there, as my screen refreshes here, European markets open. If refreshing, all of the markets are generally lower in Europe this morning. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC all lower. In Asia, markets generally finished down as well, with the Nikkei off almost 1.5%, 229 points. Here are some stories that happened while you slept last night. United Continental Holdings, based in Chicago, says it expects to cut some management employees as part of a large restructuring program. The program will not affect staff, frontline employees like pilots, flight attendants, customer service, and gate agents. This is just for some of the executives at that company, management positions. The number three U.S. airline by passenger traffic, increasing efforts to match margins of number two Delta Airlines. United said in October that cheap airfares and higher wages from new contracts could squeeze its results in the fall, making it difficult to be as profitable as competitors. Also this morning, we're doing the follow-up to Donald Trump's news conference yesterday, talking about his finances and divestiture. It appears now the government ethics office has sent him a formal letter saying that the announcement he made yesterday and the moves he's taking will not be adequate to satisfy ethics rules and requirements. That's a story developing this morning as well. Six high-level Volkswagen employees from Germany have been indicted in the U.S. in the automaker emission cheating scandal. Prosecutors made good on efforts to charge individuals in a corporate corruption case. But bringing them to trial in the U.S. is another matter. In announcing federal charges and a corporate plea bargain by Volkswagen yesterday, the Justice Department detailed a large and elaborate scheme inside Volkswagen to commit fraud and then cover it up, with at least 40 employees allegedly involved in destroying evidence. The Senate has passed a measure to take the first step toward dismantling President Obama's health care law. The nearly party line 51-48 vote came on a non-binding Republican budget-backed measure that eases the way for subsequent repeal legislation to make that easier, and that vote could come next month. The House is slated to vote on the measure on Friday. Have you been paying attention to mortgage rates? If you have, you've noticed that some of them have been going down over recent days after a short spike. Also, applications for mortgages have shot up. Today is Thursday. It's our thought leader conversation. And this morning, we welcome back in John Horton. He's the Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at Associated Bank, specializing in construction loans, jumbo mortgages, and refinancing.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little confused this morning because I'm looking at these mortgage rates and mortgage applications, and the numbers are going all kinds of different ways. What do we believe here about what's actually happening?
You know, we were talking, if you look back about a month ago, they were talking about mortgage rates move higher for the seventh week in a row. If you look at a report that was this morning, mortgage rates have moved down. It's one of those wait and see. Every article you look at with the election coming, with the gross domestic product, it's almost like the perfect storm. 10 o'clock yesterday, Mr. Trump did his press conference. It's just a matter of time. You really don't know who to believe. There's a lot of options for people out there. We always go back to education. If you have education and a relationship with your banker at Associated Bank, for instance, use a handheld approach. Don't rush into anything. Get the right advice. Might not be the best time to buy a house. You might want to wait a little bit.
So hold my hand and walk me through this. If I were to call you and say, hey, tell me what is really happening here, what would you tell somebody if they called you this morning?
It really is dependent on everyone's individual situation. Are you looking for a condo? Are you eligible for FHA? Are you a vet? You can get a VA loan for 100%. There's help products out there. There are first-time home buyer products out there. You really can't take one set approach. It is a consultative approach. You can't just quote rates. We used to say the days of rates and donuts are gone when you'd go see a realtor. You want to see what kind of clients they cater to. You want to see what kind of clientele is moving in, what area they're moving into. So it is an option where they might be looking for a one-bedroom condo or you might be looking for a six-bedroom house. Look at your market. Make sure you're with the right realtor. We deal with a lot of people that don't have attorneys. Attorneys on a purchase are you have to have an attorney on a purchase for your own protection and for your seller's protection.
Also, you know, we see the mortgage applications, too, are up. Is that because people see these rates moving higher and they're trying to lock in, or was there a holiday effect involved?
You know, if you look at the article that came out this morning, they were talking about the increase in applications over the last 2 weeks. If you look at over the last 2 weeks, it was Christmas and New Year's. You didn't really have a lot of people applying for mortgages. Last week, the purchase application was up 4%, still down 25% from this time last year. So again, if you Google enough, you're going to find the answer you want. Apps are up 4%, down 25%. Refi applications were up 6%, down 31%. We like to look at the positive side. Applications are up. It is up due to the lack of activity during the holidays. It also is that wait and see. You have the inauguration coming up next week. People want to wait and see what happens. Even the bond traders, they're saying the bond traders right now are even pulling back a little bit. They're not going to be as aggressive. They're kind of peeking their heads out of the weeds. And then when things start rolling, you're going to see more. I think you're going to see more people buying.
John, hang out with us. We're going to take a break here to check traffic. John Horton, the Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at the Associated Bank. We'll continue our thought leader conversation on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Some stocks of local interest. We had that United story about them cutting some management positions. United Continental is up about 1.5% this morning. Walgreens also moving today, up about 2.5% pre-market. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The Nasdaq hit a fifth record high close in a row yesterday, gaining 12 points to 55.63. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose nearly 100 points to 19.954. The S&P 500 added 6.5. Volkswagen will plead guilty to conspiring to defraud the U.S. government and to obstructing a federal investigation. The automaker will pay a $2.8 billion criminal fine and $1.5 billion in civil penalties for rigging vehicles to cheat on emissions tests and then lying to U.S. investigators. A survey from the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau finds that 27% of people contacted by debt collectors said they felt threatened during the interaction. The Bureau notes that it's illegal for debt collectors to harass or verbally abuse consumers. And the Queen of the Skies will retire in 2017. After 46 years, United Airlines will soon shut down the remaining Boeing 747s in its fleet for the last time. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 522, and our thought leader conversation this morning, we're talking about mortgage rates, mortgage applications. Both seem to be going up and down. John Horton, the Vice President, Senior Lending Manager at Associated Bank, is with us this morning. And John, since the last time you were in, we had a chance to see the Fed minutes of the last meeting where they raised interest rates in December. There's a suggestion there that they're serious about raising rates a couple of times in the coming year.
Possibly. And the only reason possibly, you had them, they said that, I think it was 4 years ago. After they mentioned that 4 years ago, we had 6 weeks consistent of rates going down. Janet Yellen had mentioned it was going to go up 2 to 3 more times in 2017. I believe they said that about 4 times last year. And it consistently went down. I honestly don't know how they can make those predictions. If they look at a long-term forecast, like we said, the gross domestic product is supposed to go up. Employment is supposed to continue to increase with more people getting jobs. If what they're thinking is going to happen, more positive actions in the economy, you will see rates go up. Who knows what's going to happen? It's just such a crapshoot. It's that crystal ball that everybody's banking on. But if you look at rates themselves, and I know we talked about this last time, but it's worth repeating. For every $100,000, if your rate goes from 4 to 4.25 on a $100,000 loan, your payment's going to go up $15. So people are so rate sensitive, that's where it comes back to come in the office, see what you're going to buy. It may go up a quarter. If it's a $100,000 deal, it's going to be $15 a month.
Do you often have conversations with folks who are in this for the first time and say, hey, I remember back in the 1980s and the 1990s when we saw rates pretty high. I mean, $15 on that $100,000 is not really a lot of money, is it?
No. And when you look at the millennials, I mean, the millennials right now are going to be 62% going forward for first-time home buyers, with their average home purchase being $500,000. So again, it comes down to who you're talking to. So you get people that are new in the business or new in the home buying arena that are in their 30s that have not seen rates high, they think 4.5 is just outrageous. But you look at those rate charts back in the 80s, not that I was in the business in the 80s, Steve, but when you look at the rates in the 80s, they were 16, 17%. Yeah. You got to 10%, you thought you were golden.
Yeah, I remember my mom and dad talking about their mortgage back then. It was 16, 17%. Mm-hmm. It was way up there.
Absolutely.
Is there a product that is better than another, or does it go back to that advice you said earlier about it just depends on your situation? Is it a 30-year? Is it one of these shorter-term mortgages? What are you suggesting to people?
You know, what I suggest to people, number one, is go back and do your education. I was looking at an article yesterday, and it was talking about the FHA is lowering their insurance premium, which is fantastic. But what it also said in that same article is more manageable for many young home buyers than accumulating the 20% down payment banks require for conventional mortgages. Banks don't require 20% down for a conventional mortgage. Banks require 5% down. So it goes back to your education. Some people, to get back to your question, like the 30-year. Here's my payment. In 30 years, I'm going to pay it off. Statistically, people own their homes 5 to 7 years. You can't tell someone when they're going to move. But if you look at the age range of their kids, are their kids going to school? Are their kids going to college? Are they going to be empty nesters? They're not going to keep a 4 or 5 bedroom house when their kids aren't there. They may, but it comes down to comfort on your payment, too. A lot of people come in and say, here's what I want my mortgage payment to be. What can you do for me?
So we get this all together. We have our rate locked in. We've got a package going with you. We get to the point where we're almost ready to do the deal, and all of a sudden it falls apart. This is another story that's happening this week, is that suddenly all of these agreements, sales agreements, are falling apart. Are you seeing this, and why is this happening?
It's not all, because all would be bad. Few is good. And you do see some of it, and it's kind of sad, because you see people that find their dream home. They go through the process. They get approved. Appraisal comes in. If it comes in low, it's time to renegotiate. But then you have an opportunity on the other side. If that seller can't afford to sell it at that lower appraised value, the deal's done. The other where you see them falling apart is home inspections. You could find your house, it could appraise out beautiful. You get your home inspector, you may find out you need a new furnace, you have a leaky roof, a lot of expensive items that may happen.
One of the statistics that I want to add to this conversation is this Trulia says that 3.9% of homes that move from for sale to pending move back to for sale again, meaning that agreement fell apart for some reason, nearly double the rate in 2015. Here in a time when we're talking about better regulations and removing regulations and making it harder or easier to do whatever it is that we need to do, where does this fall into that conversation?
You know, it's one of those things, even on the home buyer's side, some home buyers do not listen to their lender. I mean, at Associated Bank, they'll come in and we'll tell you, do not go buy furniture. Don't buy a boat. Don't buy a car. Don't quit your job before you close on your house. On your credit report right now, which is probably maybe the last year or so, prior to closing, they will do a soft pull on your credit. If there's alerts that there's been credit pulled, we'll have to do a full credit. And you have people that will go out and make outrageous purchases. And if their loan to value, or if their ratio, I'm sorry, their debt ratio, meaning what they make in comparison to what they spend, is really tight, something pops up on their credit that they bought a new car, it could completely knock them out of the box. So it's not always appraisals or home inspections. Sometimes it's the borrower not being coached right by their lender.
This is also this story about these agreements falling apart seems to be all the stories I'm seeing. At least they're mentioning in California, the West Coast. Is this a geographical thing too?
I think it might, you know, California prices were some of the highest run-ups, and they really did get hit. You're looking at. We were just talking yesterday. A buddy of mine was looking at moving out to California. He changed his mind when he saw the home prices. Yeah. And if you look at the average income in that area compared to people that want to move out to that area, you just can't do it. I think that had a run-up on the increase in value a lot quicker than some other areas.
We have another question for you, too, about this announcement Monday that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is cutting insurance premiums on FHA mortgages. What's going on here?
They are cutting it 25 basis points from 0.85% of the mortgage to 0.60. It's actually in effect for people that refinance after January 27th, and that is going to save about $500 a year on a 30-year fixed $200,000 mortgage. So about a million borrowers are going to save money. You know, and that's why that goes back to the education. People think, oh, I need a 30-year. I need a 30-year fixed. I got to save 20%. Well, like we just talked about, no, you can do 5% if you qualify and if you can do FHA. I don't want to say credit challenged. FHA has a little lower credit minimum, but what people have to understand is banks have what they call overlays. So even though FHA may say you can get a loan if your credit score is 550, call your bank and see what the overlay is, because that risk then falls on the bank. So the bank is going to say, great, FHA says 550, we're going to say 660. So again, it's the conversation and it's the education you need to have with your lender and your realtor.
Is this a parting gift from the Obama administration, or is this just the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development trying to tick up some of these mortgage applications?
No, you know what it is. They actually, the funds have recovered. HUD's funds have recovered. They've gained over $44 billion in value since 2012. So it's the second consecutive year since 2008 that the reserve rate exceeds the required level by law. So they actually have too much money in their piggy bank, so they're lowering it a little bit.
John, I wish you the best this year as well, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, buddy. You got it. Have a good new year.
John Horton is the Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at the Associated Bank, specializing in construction loans, jumbo mortgages, refinancing. Remember, you can hear more of our thought leader conversations online at WGNradio.com, including the podcast of today's program, and listen every Thursday for a new Associated Bank thought leader conversation right here on The Opening Bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, our Thursday edition of the show at 540 now. And this Hyperloop, have you heard of the Hyperloop? They're testing this. There's a challenge going on. And the idea is, the best way to describe it maybe is perhaps the pneumatic tube. Remember those things that you used to see at banks and in office buildings that sort of shoot you and shoot things from one floor of a building to another? The idea is that this could be the new wave in transportation. One of the notices on the website of Hyperloop One, which is at hyperloop-one.com, traveling between Melbourne and Sydney, Australia, maybe 55 minutes, where it would take by train about 3 hours and 15 minutes. This idea is causing a lot of futuristic talk around the country, and the latest involves Chicago. But first, here is the Hyperloop challenge that was just underway.
Imagine if there were a way to travel as fast as a plane with the convenience of a metro. Imagine a ride as smooth as an elevator for the cost of a bus ticket. The time you'd save, the places you'd go.
That's from the Hyperloop website and YouTube page. Ben Garbarek is a political reporter for WSYX and WTTE in Columbus, and he's with us this morning on The Opening Bell. Ben, good morning. Welcome.
Oh, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on. Now, the idea I see here that one of the teams in Columbus who won the global challenge here, the Hyperloop won global challenges, is talking about putting a Hyperloop between Chicago and Columbus. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so Columbus is now one of the 35 semifinalists around the world to test out this whole theory. You mentioned it's kind of like that tube you use at the bank when you're going through the drive-through with a teller. And it would just be putting that in a much larger scale and using that for passenger travel. So there's been a lot of different proposals to put some high-speed rail of some sort throughout the Midwest. Columbus is a city which comes up quite a bit in those talks. Chicago is a natural destination for a high-speed rail line with its history as a railroad hub and still the economic engine of the Midwest. And so this is a bit of a long shot bid, but this is still something that people here in Columbus would love to have a more direct route to Chicago, and they're at least making through the next step of that process.
So let's tell folks, if you have to, let's say you traveled by car to Chicago from Columbus or by train, how long would it take?
At this point, you can't travel by train. So that's one bad part about here in Columbus. There is no Amtrak line that runs through Columbus. So that's part of the reason why this bid is getting a little bit of traction. When it comes to driving, I was just telling your producer, I'm from the Chicago area, and I make this drive quite a bit. It's about 6 hours, roughly, depending on traffic. There's no direct route. You either take the interstate through Indianapolis or you take some back roads through Fort Wayne. So there's no good route. And so when I was talking with some of the Columbus officials here who are working on this whole project, they feel like that's what's helping them get past some of the other people who are bidding on this, because really there's a need for something like this, because there's no good way to get to Chicago from Columbus right now.
And so the way the Hyperloop is designed now, the travel time, if this were to come to fruition, would be what?
30 minutes. And that's part of what catches a lot of people's attention, obviously, because 30 minutes from Columbus to Chicago, I mean, you have a lot of people dreaming big about you could live in Chicago and work in Columbus, or vice versa. You could make a really easy, quick day trip to go to a Cubs game or something, whereas right now, obviously, that'd be a pretty long day. So it really changes the way that people could live and work in this area and potentially in Chicago as well.
Sure, and the Wildcat fan could come down and go to an Ohio State football game.
Exactly.
Right. So, this everybody keeps saying this is sort of a futuristic thing, but in doing some research for the segment, this is really, they're testing this, and it's really coming along. They've actually gotten over, the main Hyperloop folks. They've really proven that this is possible, and maybe they're getting to the point where they're going to start building it, and instead of people at first, it might be packages and cargo. Either one would be beneficial for the Midwest, wouldn't it?
Oh, no doubt. And when people here in Columbus were putting together their bids, because this is a global challenge, and so there were, I think, roughly 2,600 submissions, that's been narrowed down to 35 semifinalists. That was one thing they talked about. There are roughly 1.5 million trips, is what they're saying, between Chicago to Columbus and then carry on to Pittsburgh. So this is obviously a route that people travel quite a bit, whether it's a truck driver delivering goods, someone visiting family, or someone going for a business trip or something like that. So at this point, it's really just a matter of where is this thing going to be tested. And there are cities across the world right now which are trying to be that test lab to see if this is something that could be spread throughout the world.
You mentioned the importance of Columbus as a Midwestern business hub. For folks who are not in the business area every day, aside from Chicago, Columbus is one of these hubs in the Midwest. Talk to us about the importance of the city in terms of Midwestern business activity.
Yeah, Columbus is the fastest growing city in the Midwest. Obviously, you mentioned Ohio State is a large driver here. Yeah, this is a state capital, so there's a lot of things throughout Ohio that are all centered here in Columbus. But there is there are a lot of Fortune 500 companies which are making their home here in Columbus as well. And so Columbus is a city that's growing really quickly. And really, right now, what city officials are trying to do is to build that infrastructure to support a major city. Traditionally, Columbus has been a mid-sized city. And it's really becoming a major city just within the last 20 years or so. So it's one of those situations where as the city grows, they're trying to figure out what sort of local passenger rail might be possible, what kind of local public transportation needs to be built. And then you have to look outside of the city limits and look at what are better ways to get people here, whether they're coming here for a convention or they're coming here for a business meeting. So there's a lot of companies who are headquartered here in Columbus that would love to have something like this to help out with their clients in Chicago.
Ben, let's talk a little bit about the science behind this, because I'm trying to describe it down to folks who may not have a science background. This train would travel about 700 miles an hour, and it does that on sort of a magnetic connection with the rail, doesn't it? There's no fuel really involved.
Right, and that's one part that will appeal to a lot of people who are looking at this from an environmental standpoint, that this is not a traditional locomotive train, which would be on a track. This train would levitate on opposing magnets, so that takes away a lot of friction, and that's what allows for some of these really eye-popping speeds, like 700 miles an hour. And then it would use create a vacuum within the tube that carries that passenger car or that cargo car. And that's what would propel the car through that tube at some of those crazy speeds. So it's the interesting thing is that the technology is not actually that new. You mentioned, and you know, we talked about the, you know, going to the bank or some of the delivery systems that would be within older buildings where you just send mail right up to the top floor. This is something that's already been used. It's just never been used on quite this large of a scale and to transport people. And so that's really the problem they're trying to figure out now is how do we take this theory and just build it to scale.
We have about a minute and a half left, Ben, but I want to ask you this because, you know, there's a lot of farmland between here and Columbus and back and forth. What kind of challenges are presented by putting that kind of rail in that area? It would have to be above grade crossing, wouldn't it? Because that's a challenge that we have all these grade crossing accidents. This train goes very fast. This would have to be elevated, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And most of the renderings you'll see from Elon Musk and the other Hyperloop One people would show it above ground. This would not be a tunnel below ground. Certainly that would be one of the issues is, you know whether they have to use eminent domain or how you're cutting through, whether it's someone's farm field or neighborhoods. There are, you know, some cities it would be traveling through. And so which route would it take through that city and how difficult would it be to build something like that? So, yeah, certainly those are definitely issues that are going to have to be sorted out as this process continues to unfold and as they get to the next steps of it.
So this is a contest. When might we see a decision made on this?
So the next round is April. There will be a series of presentations made by the 35 semifinalists in Washington, D.C., New Delhi, and London. After that, they'll narrow it down a little bit farther. So this is still many months, if not years, away from the construction starting on this. But in April, we'll get a better sense for whether the Chicago to Columbus line forward or possibly one of the other submissions that's competing with this one.
Ben Garbarek is a political reporter for WSYX and WTTE in Columbus. So with us from Columbus this morning. Ben, thanks for getting up and being with us on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve. Call anytime.
All right, thank you. It's 5:49 now here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures off 41. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. The latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. After the big run-up in the cattle market on Tuesday, I guess it's no surprise that profit-taking set in yesterday. And wholesale beef prices also dropped. So as a result, we saw a fairly sharp drop in cattle futures at the Merck yesterday. The February contract down 97 cents and the January feeder cattle contract down $1.60. And hogs also came under some pressure yesterday. We still have the Goldman roll in progress, but higher cash hog prices and wholesale pork prices turned around did help a little bit in the lean hog trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. The nearby February contract gained 45 cents for the day. Now, turning to the grain market yesterday, there we saw wheat hitting a one-week low. Predictions of moisture in winter wheat country. So wheat futures were down nearly 2%. Corn and soybean futures also down. Traders adjusting positions ahead of the final 2016 crop production report due out later this morning from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So generally, the screen was red on the grain market yesterday. Interesting situation going on in South Korea, plagued with bird flu. As a result, they're now going to import shell eggs from the United States. First time ever. And the shell egg market needs that. Farm Bureau Convention, it's over. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. Now on the Associated Bank WGN Market Outlook for this Thursday, January 12th, the Labor Department releases its report today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits over the last week. Freddie Mac reports on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. Also, the Treasury Department releases the federal budget for December. The U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen will host a webcast town hall meeting in Washington with educators across the country. Also today, Germany's Federal Statistical Office has released preliminary growth figures for the country's economy, Europe's biggest for 2016. As Orion mentioned, the World Agriculture Board, Outlook Board, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture releases the latest monthly world agriculture supply and demand estimate. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes the Import and Export Price Index for December 2016. Some of the things that could move the markets as we move through the morning. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning and next on the Steve Cochran Show, and back bright and early tomorrow morning for another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.